Welcome to episode 14 of my podcast, I Shouldn't Say This, But. My name is Katie Leeson and I'm Managing Director of Social Chain UK. And joining me on this episode is Dodds. He's my producer.
Hey guys.
So this is our business episode for the week. We have split our episodes into two lovely segments, mm-hmm. a business episode and a personal episode, where we cover business-related confessions in this one. And then the other one that we do is about personal and a bit more about personal life and confessions to do with my life. So this week is the business one. Really good feedback on the last one. So I'm hoping that you enjoyed the new format. This week, my main confession and the main topic is, I shouldn't say this, but I am a control freak. Now, we'll get to that later. The format of this is we're going to be talking about a news roundup. We're going to talk about what's going on in the news this week, which will be a lot about the Super Bowl, very timely. And then we're going to do one of your admission submissions. Thank you very much again for sending those in. We'll keep encouraging those, and I'll tell you a bit later of how to send your own in. And then we're going to talk about a business lesson. Business lesson this week will all be about consumer confidence and Brexit and how you can use social to help with your branding. And then finally, we'll go into my main topic, which is, I shouldn't say this, but I'm a control freak.
Perfect.
Yeah, I think so. So welcome. Yeah, welcome to episode 14. We will dive straight in, I think.
Absolutely. So the news roundup, what's been going on in the marketing world, Katie?
In the marketing world this week, I'm not going to touch on this for very long, but the egg has cracked and everyone saw what went into the egg, or came out of the egg, should I say. Mm-hmm. For me, I thought it was a very clever use of the hype that had built
attention
up around the Ed.
Yeah.
The Ed?
The egg.
The egg, not Ed. And if you've not seen it, when the egg cracked, they put out a very good mental health message alongside it. So they talked about the fact that if you're cracking and you're struggling, then you need to speak to someone, and that the egg had finally cracked. So we've talked a lot about the egg. I'm not going to talk about it for too much longer, but I just thought it was a really nice way of using all the attention that they got to bring home a really super important message about mental health and social media. So also in the news, very timely for when we record this podcast. Can't get my words out today. Very timely for the podcast is the Super Bowl and the Super Bowl ads. The Super Bowl is only happened 2 days ago when we're recording. So we are right finger on the pulse with what's gone on with those Super Bowl ads today. Do you know how much it costs to appear?
I know that everyone says that it's expensive, isn't it?
It's super expensive. So we've done a bit of research and it looks like it's about $5.1 million to join in the conversation. Wow. In an ad break. So we know it's really expensive, but this is why it's important to be part of that conversation. And branding is the thing and the reason why it's really important. So there's been a test and a research study done based on two cans of drink. Both are exactly the same brand. One is branded and the other is not branded. The one that is branded has been on TV. Actually, that got 24% better reviews than the other can, which is exactly the same drink, had no branding on it and hasn't had any promotion on telly. So then what they tried is they reduced the ad budget, and the perception of the quality of the products for that one that was branded actually reduced after they reduced the ad budget. So remember that it's the same product in the same can, just one's branded and one isn't. From doing advertising, not only did their quality perception improve, but also the fact that people wanted to drink it more. So it's really important to remember that, yes, it's very expensive, but what advertising does do is it improves the quality perception and also improves the intention for people to consume. Now we have discussed how much it costs and why branding is so important, I think it's also important to look at how those ads performed, because as we always talk about on this podcast, entertaining people and getting people to feel something is your main objective with your advertising. So we have had the Data Chain team look at search terms and increasing search terms for the brands that appeared within the Super Bowl, and also the brand sentiment from Twitter. So what we found, there are definite winners and losers from the Super Bowl. And the winners, interestingly enough, were Bumble, who their search actually increased 2,000% versus their average search day around the Super Bowl time. And also, tweets around the Super Bowl about Bumble were 56% positive and only 1% negative. This ad was an ad with Serena Williams in, talking about how Bumble can help her life and how women, it was female empowerment, getting you to take the lead and the ball's in your court to start conversations, be that through relationships or personal life or business. Obviously, female empowerment, we've had a couple of adverts recently that have touched on this topic. The Bumble one being one and the Gillette ad being another. We talked about Gillette in last week's episode. The Gillette one didn't do as well, and you can see why the Bumble one did better. It's so much more authentic. Serena Williams lives and breathes what she's talking about. She talks a lot about being a mum. She talks a lot about being a working mum. She talks a lot about being a female within sport. The message is really genuine versus the Gillette ad that kind of just seemed to come out of nowhere versus their brand values from the past. So yeah, Bumble definitely won the Super Bowl alongside Stella Artois, who... also, which is not really a surprise when you think about alcohol brands in the Super Bowl, because it's a big thing in the US and everyone gets together and it's a big social occasion. So the search for Stella Artois increased over 8,000% versus their average, which is huge. So if you're spending that much money on an ad within such a high profile event, you want that sort of result. You want people to be feeling, you want people to be searching, you want people to be reacting positively to the ads you've created. On the flip side of that, if you're spending a lot of money and then you don't get any sort of reaction above the average of what you'd normally get, to me, that's not money well spent. So a couple of the brands that we've noticed that didn't really get any increase in searches versus the average that they normally get is Pampers being one, which kind of makes sense if you think about the audience watching Super Bowl. Why would they then go and search Pampers? The ad obviously didn't make them feel something. And then also Verizon, which is a mobile telecoms company in the US, again, had no real increase in searches. If you look around the ads that did do really well, they tended to have celebrity in there. They tended to be entertaining. We absolutely love the Pepsi ad because it was relatable to everyday occurrences that you go through in life. So Pepsi was all about, when you go into a restaurant and you ask for a Coke, because you automatically ask for a Coke, the waiter turns around and says, "Is Pepsi, is that all right?" And they played on that and they twisted it and they made it into a really positive thing that, yeah, it's all right. It's like the best thing that could ever happen to you. If you've not seen that, I think that was my favourite from the Super Bowl weekend. So definitely look that up. And I'm sure that they did incredibly well from the back of that ad. So the thing that tapped into was a cultural norm. Things that you experience all the time. And they've really played on it to try and get Pepsi within that conversation. So I really like the way they did it. Next time that happens to you and someone says to you, "Is Pepsi okay?" you'll definitely think about that ad and think, yeah, that's okay. And I thought that was a very clever spin. And also changing it away from something that is always related to one brand, Coca-Cola, and making it more positive about Pepsi. I love Super Bowl ads. It's like Christmas.
It's like the Oscars, isn't it? It really brings out, well, not always the best ads, but it does bring out usually some of the best ads.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like a different type of ad, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like our Christmas showcase when we have the John Lewis ad. Everyone's waiting for it. Waiting to see what people are going to do on the Super Bowl ads, which is great. I also love April Fool's Day. Looking through the papers and seeing what's in there.
See which brands jumped on that.
Yeah. The thing to take away from all of that is that if you're going to spend that much money on an ad, think about it less as a sell of the brand, more about making you feel something. We were talking before we started recording this podcast about the first ad that we really remember doing that, which is the Gorilla Cadbury's ad. Their brief was just to make people happy for that ad. It had no mention of the brand. It just was the colour purple. It also didn't have any product placement in there at all, but it did incredibly well and people went in their droves to watch it on YouTube. So please don't feel like you've always got to push product. Make sure that people feeling something when you've got such an entertaining moment like the Super Bowl and you're spending a lot of money, that you tap into that entertaining moment and you make the most of it. Now it is time for our admission submission. Thank you so much. We seem to be getting more and more of these and I absolutely love it. If you want to leave your own admission submission, please feel free to go to the website www.katieleeson.com and you can leave your submission on there.
And can I just say that we do read them all and that we are going to go through them all, but there's a bit of a backlog. So I think this one is from a couple of weeks ago. So if you do submit one, just know that we do read it and that we will eventually get around to it. There's just a bit of a backlog, so don't feel like if we don't do it the next week then you're gonna hate us.
Yeah, we're working through them all because we've been a bit overwhelmed by the amount we've had, so thank you.
Which
very
is
much
a good problem to have.
It's a great problem to have. So this week's one reads, it's all about work-life balance. So this week's one reads, in the UK, unpaid overtime is the norm in most businesses. People who do this on a regular basis are more likely to be promoted than those who do not for their hard work and dedication. It could be argued that managing directors are encouraging this arguably unhealthy work-life balance through the premise of faster advancement through the company. What are your thoughts on this? Is it something you agree with? I'm just going to add the PS at the bottom of Dodd because it's a lot. PS, enjoying the podcast so far. Keep it up. Thanks.
Nice. So you're a marketing director, Katie.
I'm a managing director, Dodd.
Oh, sorry. So you're a managing director, Katie. And this submission is saying managing directors encourage unhealthy work-life balance. In the UK, they're saying that overtime is pretty much the norm. People are expected to stay behind and work late hours. Hard work and dedication. Hashtag hustle culture. Am I right?
Okay.
So is that something that you agree with or disagree with?
I would never promote an unhealthy work-life balance for a start. I think we've talked about this briefly before with the hustle culture. For me, I think you really need to look at how... I think the comment about managing directors is interesting because I think people see managing directors working longer hours. By being a managing director or by thinking of working hard and having to work longer hours, people see that managing directors do it more and they feel like they should also do it if they want to reach that position. Now, we do have to work sometimes longer hours than other people because of the fact that, the thing is, my day can be so split up into different things. Like yesterday, I had a full day of back-to-back meetings. So in order to then catch up and make sure I'm on top of things, I then have to work a little bit longer in order to make sure that I'm not missing anything from the day. So I think for me, it's not that I'm not encouraging everyone to work like that. I don't want everyone to work in the same way that I do, but I also try and make sure that I'm very strict on my work-life balance. It's incredibly important to get the rest and the mind rest, especially when you're working in creative industries, to keep that creativity flowing. And if you're working constantly and you're pushing yourself, you're not going to be creative. So for me, work-life balance is incredibly important, and I would never encourage anyone to work all hours God sends in the team that I look after. So if when I'm leaving on a night time, if there's someone there that is working late, I'll always check in as to why, check how long they're going to be there, check whether they need any help, and then check the next day what time they got home. We have such a flexible working culture that enables us, if you do work late, we encourage people to take that time back, especially if they work weekends. We all have to work quite different hours working in social media and also for an agency, which sometimes then means that you have to work different hours to the set 9 to 5. But in order to make sure you get that time back, we have unlimited holidays and flexible working to ensure that you don't end up burning out. Now we are moving on to our business lesson of the week. As we get closer to Brexit deadline day, I think it's important to talk about consumer confidence and where things are going, the trends that we're noticing, and then how you can use social to make your brand stand out and remain at the forefront of people's minds as they go through a period of massive uncertainty, which is what we're all facing at the moment. The most recent consumer confidence study showed that December, which is obviously the time for Christmas and high spending, consumer confidence was at its all-time low for the last 5 years, which is quite scary, and that January is actually no better. YouGov have published an article saying that confidence has dropped 104.3 points in January, which is the lowest level that has been seen since May 2013. Expectations of business activity has slumped to a low not seen since 2011. So we are at a point where people just don't know what to spend on, don't want to be spending, a battle down the hatches, making sure that they are protecting their money in wake of a very uncertain Brexit exit. So everyone is kind of in the same boat here. Consumers don't want to spend. They want to hold back and see what happens. They don't know whether they need to buy a new coat or whether they need to save their money for beans. Who knows what's going to happen to the supermarkets? And then brands, on the other hand, then don't know how to forecast correctly because no one knows where their spending's going to be. So it is a very uncertain time. Social will play a very big part in regaining a small amount of consumer confidence and remaining at the front of mind for brands. So here are my tips of how to use social to regain customer trust. First off is consistency and remaining part of a conversation. If you disappear, it makes you look like you're scared too. So I would remain consistent in your messaging. Maybe not be so forceful, but make sure you are always there. So don't keep pushing the brand, don't keep pushing the sell, but make sure you're remaining part of a conversation on social media. It's very easy to do. It doesn't cost a fortune, but it just means that your brand is always front of mind. So number two is to be where the attention is. People are on social a hell of a lot, and they spend a lot of their downtime on social media. Make sure that you are in the place where they are spending their most time. Number three is do not oversell. I think at the moment when people are unsure what to buy and when, you don't want to be pushing product messages and too much down their throat all at once, but build a relationship that people can keep coming back to and keep engaging with, so that when they are ready to spend, your brand is at the top of their mind when they start to open their purses again. So now you have built a relationship with consumers and you've been part of their lives and part of the conversation, you can then start to push them further down the funnel into potentially sales when they are ready. And how you do that is you look at all your data, you understand who's hitting the website, who's putting stuff in baskets, who's not completing those transactions, and retarget them with messages to help them complete the sale. So in this time when things are very much out of our control, the one thing that you can control is building a relationship with your consumers, building that brand loyalty. And you can do that through social media and building a constant conversation with your audience. So for me, I think you really need to focus on that at this uncertain time. You might not be able to force them to buy anything at the moment, but if you build that relationship, they'll see that you're still around, they'll see that you're still relevant, and they'll keep coming back when they're ready. So moving on from a topic that none of us can control leads me on very nicely to my main topic of the week, which is, I shouldn't say this, but I am a control freak. I think everybody knows this, if you know me, knows that I'm an absolute control freak in work and in life. I don't know why. I just don't like not being in control. So when you start out your career, you are in control of your own day. You've got your to-do list. You've got your jobs that you know you need to do that day. You've got a list of things that you know you need to hit. as you start to get more advanced in your career and you start to progress, you lose control of those things that you know you need to do because you need to rely on other people to help you achieve them. And as I've gone up the career ladder, so to speak, I have started to lose control of things that I would normally do. And one of the biggest lessons that I've learned as a leader within a business is that you have to stop doing everything. You can't physically do everything, but it's really, really hard to let that go. So as someone who is a massive control freak and feels like they need to be able to have an impact on everything, moving away from doing the do and doing the day-to-day, moving into a leadership role where you then more oversee everything and you don't see the immediate impact of ticking a job off your list is incredibly uncomfortable. But what I have learned is that building a brilliant team around me of people that I trust, that I can ask them to help me in areas that I'm not as strong in, which also leads back to my imposter syndrome. I know that I'm not the best at everything and I can never be the best at everything, but moving away from that and building a team where I know that people can supplement my skill set means that I have the complete trust of the team that I have working alongside me. It also means that I can let go of that bit of control freakness. I have a massive list of things that I need to do, a massive list of things that I'm asking other people to do. And yes, I check in and yes, I make sure that those things have happened. But in knowing that I've got a team that I can trust means that I can let go of those tasks that I would normally try and hold on to and then enable those guys to do it and make sure that I then know that it's for the best for the agency, because me trying to do a job on data, I can't do that. I don't know how to analyse the numbers, but giving that to our ops director, Paul, who has got such an analytical brain, in doing that means that I know that I can fully step back and concentrate on other things within the business and know that he's going to produce something that I could never do. So I'm quite happy to let go of that control freak. But you have to take that step. You have to be able to take a step back and just kind of jump off the cliff, so to speak. Do it once and you know that you'll be absolutely fine again and again and again. It's the hardest lesson I've learned as a leader.
What, giving up control?
Giving up control.
But then you also know that, no offence, but Paul will do a better job in the data than you will.
And so much
data is important.
Yeah.
So it's for the benefit of all.
It's for the benefit of the agency when you allow other people to do things that you are not so good at and they're better at, because you know you'll have a better outcome and quicker as well, so it'll make you more efficient.
So as you are learning to, I don't necessarily think being control freak is a bad thing, but how do you manage your impulse to control?
Being a control freak definitely is not the worst thing in the world. For me, it helps set a standard that I want everything to hit. So in a way, it's a good benchmark.
Maybe possibly even helped you career-wise.
Yeah, probably, because I always want to achieve certain things with the control freak in me.
So if anybody is a control freak, don't necessarily worry about it.
No, don't worry about it too much, but you do have to learn when it's becoming more of an issue and it's holding you back. You have to learn to let it go sometimes. So in certain instances it's really useful, because it's like life, I guess. There's certain things that you can control and certain things you can't control. And when you're a control freak, the things that you can control, make sure you control that as much as you can. So you are in control of your own happiness. You're in control of your own mood. You're in control of your money. If you are strict on how you control those, that's only for the benefit of you. But the things that you can't control, that you then obsess over trying to control, are the things that are just going to send you depressed. It's going to make you depressed. And you can't do anything about those things. So a big lesson that I have learned in life is that you can't control everything and don't try to.
I feel that's really good.
Muchas gracias.
I love that, I use rant, but not in a negative way. because I don't think you've ever just spoken for that length of time on a topic. It's obviously a topic
I've had to really learn.
But then, like the first episode to this episode, you wouldn't have spoken for that amount of time without looking at your notes.
So as you can probably tell from the way that I talk so passionately about this topic, it's something that I've really had to work on with my own personality. And I really hope that if you feel like the control freak in you is taking over, just learn how to control it and use it for the benefit of putting that energy into getting something really good out of this very moment right now. And I promise you that will help with your inner control freak. So thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really hope you found it useful. Please subscribe, please comment, please tell a friend who might need a bit of business advice, be that about media, social, marketing, or just general business tips for leaders and aspiring leaders. And we hope to see you next week. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you soon.